All right, this is recording. 5 seconds in. Hello, everybody. This return has been a long time coming, and I'm finally going to do this. This is a new show on my channel known as Just Mike. I am your host, Just Mike, and this is the very first episode of a new show I like to call the Rock on Wild Show. Now, as an introduction, if you don't know, Rock on Wild was the name that I made for my very first YouTube channel, which is still up. There's a whole bunch of memes on there and a bunch of vlogs and tours and all that sort of stuff, concerts and everything. That channel is still active. I still use it, but for this channel that used to be known as Mike Make Rock Movie Reviews and Mike Psychopath the Legend, I have now rebranded for a third and final time, and hopefully third time is the charm. This is the channel known as Just Mike. I am Just Mike, and this is the very first episode of the Rock on Wild Show. So now you know the origins of the Rock on Wild Show and what that represents. This represents the beginning, the alpha, if you will. What is the omega? I don't know. That's what the future holds. But for right now, this is the very first episode. And this episode is called How Much Music Has Changed My Life. How Music Has Changed My Life. So music is one of my passions that I really value and has changed my life for the better. It created a purpose for me when other activities didn't do much for my liking. I never go a day without listening to music, whether it's from my iPod, the radio, or what is shown on TV through music videos. And there's always a song playing in my head right now. What's going on in my head right now? I have a song by Allie Nicholas called Bored in my head, which is really good. It's on my top 10, which I'll get to close to the end of the speech. Whenever I hear a slow ballad, it calms me and it is very soothing to the ears. And whenever I hear an upbeat, fast-paced song, I just can't help but dance to it, and nothing else matters in the world. Over the years, my taste in music has grown and changed. It all started back in 1987 in Scarborough, Ontario, when my dad started playing Elvis Presley. And I instantly fell in love with his music at such a young age of only a year old. And some of my favorite songs by Elvis were Trouble, Blue Suede Shoes, Hound Dog, and Heartbreak Hotel. And that's just to name a few. I can list a bunch of other ones. Heck, Elvis Presley, a topic in itself, is, like I said, a topic in itself. And that was my introduction to music. And I was just blown away by his vocals and his stage presence whenever my dad shows one of his live concerts. A great example of this was an Elvis concert in Hawaii where he performed the American Trilogy. And going back and listening to these songs now, I understand and appreciate his music a lot more. The sounds of the instruments, the rhythm of the drums, and the mesmerizing melodies really make the music of Elvis Presley truly memorable and left a huge impact on me because of that introduction factor. You always remember your firsts. And music, and most of the music that my dad played was classic rock with bands such as the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, Jimi Hendrix, and AC/DC. So I was brought up listening to the old guard of rock and roll, and I couldn't get enough of it. And that left a huge impact on me with the heavy guitar riffs, the hard-fast tempo beats, and the rawness of the vocals, whether it's from Bon Scott or Brian Johnson, or even Robert Plant for that matter. All great vocalists. And when it comes to those bands, such as Led Zeppelin and the Stones, they are absolutely nothing short but legendary bands. And the music those classic rock bands came out with were incredible and absolutely timeless. I still go back and listen to some of the music. Some of my favorite songs by Led Zeppelin are Stairway to Heaven, Black Dog, When the Lippy Breaks, and Rock and Roll. Some of my favorite songs by the Rolling Stones are Satisfaction, Honky Tonk Woman, and Time is on My Side. Some of my favorite songs by AC/DC are Thunderstruck, Money Talks, You Shook Me, and Back in Black. Listening to those bands now in 2024 feels like more of a respectful thing because of the classic decade in the time that it came out and the nature of the genre of rock that has brought to my ears, and I hope to pass down that music for other generations to come. I started listening to the radio at such a young age as well, looking to see what else is out there. And I thought to myself, there had to be more than just classic rock bands from the 60s and 70s and 80s than the ones that I've listed here. I started listening to the radio back in 1992 when I moved from Toronto to Newfoundland. And by the year 1996, I started listening to this rock band called Matchbox 20. And the first song I heard from them was a song called Push. It was okay, I thought, but as I listened to the song more, I grew more love for it, and I wanted to hear more from this band. So I bought their first two albums, and I enjoyed every single song that is on their albums. I bought their second and third albums, and they're both really good as well. But it was that first album by Matchbox 20 that made a great first impression for me, because I learned and memorized a lot of their songs word by word, lyric by lyric, guitar note and drum beat. And with all that said, it was Matchbox 20 that somewhat in a way introduced me to the 90s genre of rock. Sure, there were other bands before, like Jars of Clay and the Gin Blossoms and Counting Crows, but for me, the band of the 90s was Matchbox 20. And just the world of mainstream music was something that I really grown attached to, and it all started in those early days of the 1990s. And in my opinion, the 90s decade was the best decade of music because of bands such as Matchbox 20, Lifehouse, Third Eye Blind, Smash Mouth, The Tea Party, and that's just only a very few 90s bands that I listened to. And the 90s decade is another show in itself that I could get into more in depth in. Also, singers and songwriters such as such as Amanda Marshall and Alanis Morissette. Those are my top two favorites from the 90s. There are others as well, and I'll get into that. And throughout the 90s, I also listened to pop, with pop acts like the Backstreet Boys, NSYNC, 98 Degrees, LFO, Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera. I even listened to Casey Kasem's Top 40, in which I never missed a single week of it, and it was my favorite countdown that was on the radio. Sure, there was the World Chart Show that came after, and Rick D's in the Weekly Top 40, which was on another station. It was Casey Kasem that really hooked me in. I just love his voice. Casey Kasem's voice is so soothing to me. Casey Kasem is my guy, the one that I go to for any chart-topping lists. And I loved waking up every Saturday morning at 8 a.m. just to listen to Casey's Top 40 to keep track of my favorites by not missing a song on the countdown, and I thought it was a lot of fun. I even recorded the top 10 portions on sheets of paper where I placed in a black binder from 1996 to 1999. So you can imagine the amount of paper that I wasted just recording the top 10s here. And I wish I would have kept that binder today to look over it, just to see what songs have topped the charts back then. But there's one in particular I'm going to talk about. During the time in 1996, I Love You Always Forever by Donna Lewis topped the charts for 12 straight weeks. And it was played so much on the radio, I got tired of singing it. It's just one of those things, you know, the more you hear a song, the more you get sick of it. But now in 2024, if I seek it out or if it's playing on a station, I now have a more appreciation just by listening to it now. It's a feeling I really can't describe, much like the rest of the songs that came out in the 90s decade. I just love the 90s. And by the time the new millennium started in the year 2000, I started growing only a little bit distant with the top 40 mainstream music in general, but I still continued listening mainly from 2000 to 2004. There was some stuff that came out that was really good. I mean, Sum 41 was one of my favorite bands that came out not only of Canada, but came out of that 2000s decade. And I still continue listening to them, and I still continue listening to the radio to stay current with the times. Back in those early 2000s days, there were some songs I liked during that time, such as In the End by Linkin Park, which has a great piano melody that is still stuck in my mind, and rest in peace, Chester Bennington. Also, a song called Broken by Seether featuring Amy Lee of Evanescence, which is a great combination of sad, beautiful, haunting melodies and vocals. Especially from Amy Lee. I mean, Evanescence is another band that got me into those early 2000s. By the time I graduated high school in 2004, I pretty much just said to myself, I feel like I'm done with the mainstream world of music. And it didn't feel like it was a tough choice for me at all because of the direction the industry was heading into. And I knew I wouldn't have access to what was going on in the radio for a good while. But now, during this time in 2004 and 2005, I still listened to some of my CDs on my Walkman. Yeah, I had a Walkman. During that time, I listened to mostly Finger 11, Kid Rock, and some of the WWE variety CDs that feature bands such as Mercy Drive and Brand New Sin. When I first received the internet in 2006, I started searching for more songs by Brand New Sin and Mercy Drive and came across some really good heavy songs like Away and See You Crawl by Mercy Drive and Did Me Wrong and My World by Brand New Sin, along with many more songs by both bands. They are both, I think, are completely underrated, and they have influenced my life because they show me that I don't need to keep current with the times in mainstream music, and that my taste was starting to grow. It was starting to evolve even more. And at this point, it was the internet that led me to discover music that I never heard before. And one of those bands was Nonpoint. To me, Nonpoint is a huge factor of the influence of me listening to music. And some of the best songs are songs like Bullet With a Name, Fraught Lines, To the Pain, Lights, Camera, Action, just to name a few. And on a side note, I do planning on doing some sort of new Nonpoint list where I rank the songs again. And they were also absolutely fun to see live in concert as well. Just the energy from the crowd, it was crazy, and I loved it so much. And I absolutely cried with tears of happiness after the show. Nonpoint's music left a huge impact on me because it was during the time I was going through a bit of a heavy time at work when it felt too much. sometimes, so they're hard and heavy sound released all my energy and loosened me up in my life and created a sense of balance, just like music in general. And then there was a time in my life, back in my old college days from 2007 and 2009, I started getting into more of a gothic side of music because I was going through a little bit of a rough patch. Sometimes there's always a personal issue. Sometimes the stress kind of gets to you every now and then. But at that time, I came across a band called Within Temptation. And I instantly fell in love with their music. It helped me get through the days when I needed it. Some of their songs, such as Deceiver of Fools, Restless, Enter, Forgiven, Somewhere, and What Have You Done, inspired how the way I see the world through their lyrics and how beautiful, just how beautiful their music really sounded. I couldn't get enough of their music, and it still helps me whenever I need it. My exploring of symphonic metal bands did not stop there, because every other band just came knocking on my internet door, including Epica, Leaves Eyes, Exandria, and Camelot. In fact, I saw Camelot and Exandria live not too long ago, and what a show that was. So all these bands left the same impact on me the way Within Temptation did. And I can go on all day about how great these bands are and how much their music has changed the way I listen to music today. Their classic melodies of symphonic metal and the powerful operatic vocals are what makes symphonic metal a fantastic genre to listen to. And my understanding is that symphonic metal is a hard genre to get into, but once you get into it, you just kind of get used to it after a while. So overall, music is a big part of my life, and just discovering new music to see what there is there that I never knew about is a great feeling to have, because it opened up my world of listening to different genres of music, from rock to jazz to hip-hop. I mean, I listen to everything. It's not just rock and metal. I listen to country, a little bit of old country, like Conway Twitty and Johnny Cash, Loretta Lynn, Willie Nelson. I listen to hip-hop, any kind of hip-hop, mainly from the 90s and early 2000s is the hip-hop. A little bit of rap. I do enjoy Eminem. I do like rap. Jazz as well, swing. I even listen to an artist by the name of Voltaire, and he does a lot of stuff from dark wave, new wave, cabaret, and it's really outside the box. So he's another big influence of myself listening to music. And I can go on for hours and hours and hours on end just listening to music. And if I had the power to listen to music 24/7, I would do that in a heartbeat. It all started with Elvis, the Rolling Stones, Led Zeppelin, and AC/DC, and then continued with some of the modern rock and metal bands like Nonpoint, Within Temptation, Epica, Leaves Eyes. To me, they are modern. The evolution of how I listen to music will continue to grow, because for the past pretty much 9 to 10 years now, I've brought back my favorite hobby of counting down my favorite top 10 songs of the week of current metal and rock bands in the odd one every now and then. And that is the reason why the drop I have. Actually, what I meant to say there is, and that is the reason why the drop I have for music continues today. I hope it continues, because without my love for music, life would be dull and boring. Music has brought that excitement to my life when I needed it the most. And it will always be that way for as long as I live. I mean, music is magic. You can't describe it. So that's how much music means to me. Right now, I'm going to open up my camera. Where's my camera? Start cam. Well, hello there. Hello, everybody. You're looking at the new and improved layout. If you don't know, I don't know why I keep looking up there. I mean, I have a big old monitor right here. So that's pretty much what I'm looking at. But my camera is right here. There it is. There it is. Hey, what is up, everyone? And how's it going? I am just Mike, and you are watching the very first episode of the Rock on Wild show. That was my introduction topic. I'm only going to go a little bit more just as a first episode here. So what I'm going to do is share the screen. I have a few tabs open. I'm going to give you a couple of topics. Not actually topics, but some stuff I thought was interesting. So what I'm going to do, how can I share the screen? All right, let's see. I got to figure out present, share screen. There we go. Let's look at this now. Staying on the topic of music, one of the things is this is something I'd like to share. I found a website called What Happened Today, What Happened on This Day in Music. So, and found one particular thing I thought was really cool. And this is right here I'm going to highlight. 2008. On August 7th, 2008, which is when I'm actually recording this, Elvis Presley's peacock jumpsuit was sold at auction for $300,000, making it the most expensive piece of Elvis memorabilia ever sold at an auction. The wife outfit with a plunging V-neck and high collar featured a blue and gold peacock design, had hand embroidered on the front and back and along the pants legs. So that's pretty cool. So I'm going to remove that. One of the other things I'm going to do, probably for every episode, is look at the horoscope. So let's see. Let's add stage. Actually, move. Stop screen. Okay, settings. Actually, no settings. Not settings. Present. Share screen. All right. The horoscope. So, again, I'm recording this on August 7th, 2024. And this is the horoscope for Leo. Frustration could tempt you to release that energy by spending a lot of money. You might overindulge in food or drink or resort to impulse buying. Treat yourself a little, but don't go overboard. You don't want to get an upset stomach. And you won't want to have to take unwanted items back to the store. You find yourself doing that too? Get some exercise or throw your passion into creative pursuits, just like me presenting the Rock on Wild show. All right. So, well, there's one more thing I would like to do. I'm going to stop the screen. I'm going to present one more time. One of the ideas I had to do the show is to react to my past self. That's right. I want to react to my past self. So I have decided that I'm going to react to some of my older videos of me mainly doing movie reviews and other reviews that I have done. Now, again, every single one of these is private, but you are going to see me react to myself. I've never done this before, and this is a segment I like to do on every episode. So without further ado, let's present. Share screen. Okay, make sure the audio is on. And Need for Speed movie review. So, all right, here we go.
Usually, when movies are based off of games, they either tend to either make it or break it. Need for Speed ultimately, at the end, really broke it. And I'm about to tell you why.
I don't know if you could hear that, but when I play this back, I'll see if it works. If not, I could probably do this over, but let's see how this goes.
If there's one thing I've learned over the past 20 years I've been watching movies, you see enough movies to know that you can now really pick apart and dissect every single thing about movies. And Need for Speed is a really good case of that. And overall, this movie, yes, it's not one of the greatest movies when it comes to acting, the drama, the story, but what it did do is provide some really good action sequences involving the car chases and the way the cinematography was presented as well. I like the whole idea of the camera shots at the point of view of people inside the vehicle, the people inside the race cars. So I like those things like that when I'm watching these type of movies. And ultimately, I think that, like I said, this was one of those movies I would recommend you to see if you just want to go for the race car driving, the action,
I
because
mean, the race car driving
that
was pretty good,
stuff
I
to
thought.
me is the only positive I can think of
Yeah.
talking about Need for Speed. Moving on
It's just in the
to a
nose
lot of the
for
negative stuff that happened. Aaron Paul, he is the star of the movie, and the movie is revolved around him about wanting to get revenge on the guy that killed his friend while they were racing. And I thought the whole setup between the good guy and the bad guy was actually presented pretty good. The only thing I don't like were the stuff in between, how they threw away common sense and logic. Things happen this way, that way, and I was like, I don't get it. What just happened? And you can make the argument that in a lot of action movies, you could throw away, believability and that common sense and stuff like that
That's
to
kind of
really
test me
enjoy
curious.
action movies. And it's just one of those things that really stands out.
Yeah, the Need for Speed movie I thought was the I don't know if I actually mentioned this in this review, but it is almost like a Fast and Furious type of thing as well.
While watching this movie is how bad it was when it came to the story.
Oh my God.
The story
Yeah, I don't remember the
started
story.
off okay. Then it was okay, kind of getting awkward and very weird. And at the end, it was just dumb. It was very stupid. The way it ended was wow, not the greatest. And Aaron Paul's acting to me in this movie, there was something missing. There's no charisma coming out of this guy. He's not an actor that's oozing charisma. He does have this emotional depth to him, but it's not enough, I don't think, to save his acting. Because to me, Aaron Paul is just one of those actors that's very limited to what he can do. And
keep this in mind, this was way before I even watched Breaking Bad. And after watching Breaking Bad, now Aaron Paul to me is one of my favorite TV actors going today.
The supporting actors around him were not the greatest actors in this movie at all. And if I were to combine every single actor in this movie to a guy like Leonardo DiCaprio at his level, all the actors combined are nowhere near his league. I think ultimately at the end, everyone in this movie could have been a lot better than they were. There was no chemistry between the star of the movie and the woman, the blonde woman with the English accent. And like I said, if you want to see an action movie with car chases involved and things like that, of that nature, then this is the movie for you. If you want to see a movie with great acting, Oscar-winning performances, great story, no, not at all. This is not the movie for you.
I actually remember this being pretty bad.
And ultimately, at the end, to me, this movie was bad. It dragged out too long. I think it should have been 20 minutes, a lot shorter. And like I said, there were a lot of things that were really bad. And the comedy as well. There were a couple of moments in the comedy where it tried too hard and it just didn't work and wasn't very laughable as well. And so, like I said, things like the comedy, the story, and everything else, the acting, were not all that great, but the action was superb. The cinematography was off the charts, I thought. The way they portrayed the images on screen while they're zooming across the roads and stuff like that. And I watched this movie in 3D as well, and there were a couple of 3D moments. One in particular to me really stood out with the first car chase scene where they...
Speaking of 3D, the only movie that done 3D the best was Avatar, the first one.
Where one car hit a homeless guy's cart, and the garbage was coming at you. And I was like, whoa, well, what just happened? So there was a couple of good 3D moments in this movie. It's not an overall sense 3D. It's no Avatar. Let's just put it that way. And in the end, to me, I usually rank these movies out of 100, and I'll put it to you this way. The movie was so slow, it felt like it was like a 3 or 4 hour movie. So if I were a race car driver while reviewing this movie, I'm only going at 35 miles an hour. And that was my review for Need for Speed. And if you saw the movie, what did you think about it? You can feel free to comment below. And you can comment, rate, subscribe on this video as well. And on a final note to all you viewers watching, get plenty of rest. And always do your best.
So, yeah. One thing I noticed while watching that movie review back is that I didn't have the number placed on the screen just yet. I know that was something I'd done much later on. I don't know when I started doing that, actually, but yeah, that was me reacting to my very first review on this very channel. That was the movie called Need for Speed, and that came out 10 years ago. Jesus, time is going by too fast. Anyway, 34 minutes in. I think that's a solid start for this new show called The Rock Out Wild Show. If this is your first time watching this, hit that subscribe button, like this video, share it wherever you want to share it. What else? Stay tuned for the next episode, whenever that gets uploaded. And on a final note, to all of you viewers watching, get plenty of rest and always do your best.